Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to Man on the Post Weekend Review. I'm Dave, and tonight is a night when two become one, because I'm joined by Simon O'Regan.
what a lovely honestly, your introductions are superb, I've got to say, Dave.
Thanks. Well, I thought it could be my new thing. And then, obviously, there's only the two of us tonight, so... But I've got a whole host lined up when I've got more people, so don't worry about that.
Looking forward to them.
Me too. A strange weekend in that there were four Premier League games of questionable quality and four FA Cup games, which, to be fair, were actually mostly very good. So we're going to do the Premier League games first, and then we'll cover the FA Cup, and then Simon will get annoyed with me and snap at some of my questions, and we'll close. Also, at Jurgen Klopp, right? Never mind.
we're all really going to miss him when he's gone, aren't we?
He's such a nice man, isn't he?
I know, yeah. For really, what a character.
What a character. Right. Speaking of characters, Burnley beat Brentford 2-1. Reguilon did his bit for Burnley's survival hopes, I think it's fair to say, with the most needless of penalty concessions in the first few minutes, followed by a red card. Which certainly helped Burnley on their way to a 2-1 win. Burnley off the bottom. Brentford are very much in the mix, although we're given a helping hand today, which we'll come on to later on by the old points deduction ruling. What do you make of this one, if anything?
I mean, yeah, it's a funny... Had Brentford not basically had to play the whole game with 10 men, you'd probably have backed them to have come away with the points just because Burnley have been so bad this season. But yeah, like you say, the penalty to give away and get the red cards, you just think, like, obviously, this is where, you know, sometimes you wonder, like, I mean, I don't know if you ever have, but if you ever wondered, oh, could I have made it as a professional? Because, and then you kind of think, well, no, because, you know, they've got that bit extra in their head. But so often you see defenders will also blindly panic exactly the same way you would in certain situations, because you look at that and think, it's so early on in the game, just let the guy take this. You know, even if you go 1-0 down, it's the eighth minute, but to give away a foul like that, which you really should know you're going to get sent off for, because I don't think there's any way you could try and claim that you were making an attempt for the ball, so the double jeopardy rule won't apply. Really stupid. And obviously, you know, like you said, it definitely helped Burnley out. Fofana got himself another goal. I wonder if there's any other clubs that need a centre-forward who can score goals in the Premier League that they could have done a job for. That may be the one that sends them out on loan, actually. That would have been an idea. But, I'm sure it's a nice win for Burnley. I suppose technically it keeps them alive in the relegation race, as they're only now 5 points off from safety. I still don't see them, you know, actually staying up, because they've not shown really any sort of sign that they're capable of doing it. I suppose the only thing that I would say, and, you know, you mentioned Brentford's kind of in the mix, which they definitely are, and they need Tony to start scoring again soon. But like we've said for the last couple of weeks, Brentford have got a player down there that no one else has got in terms of a centre-forward who will get goals. You know, Fofana, that's what, 3 or 4 goals now since he's gone in there. So
you could add a few here, to be fair. He missed a couple of really decent chances.
Yeah, and I think I can't remember who I saw on the weekends talking about him. I don't know if he was on Sky or on Match of Love. Someone was talking about Fofana being at Burnley. And that he was kind of saying that the fact that he's on loan there kind of makes it a bit more easier for him to be sort of freer in his natural game in terms of, like, I think the point I was saying though is if he was like a permanent player there, you're kind of more worried and tense about the threat of relegation because he knows that he's not going to be at Burnley next season if they go down. So he can just sort of play his game. The team that do like to try and create chances, he's going to get chances and he's showing that he's capable of scoring goals. So that gives them half a chance, but they're so bad at the back, I think that will kind of negate anything that he could do.
Yeah, I think obviously, I mean, the defence has conceded 63 goals in 29 games, which is not very clever, to say the least.
But they've now dropped the English Vicario, though.
They have. They've brought in the Dutch James Trafford, I think. Yeah. Is Muric Dutch? I've said he's Dutch.
Let's go with it.
I don't know his first name, to Google him. Oh, it must be Arjanet, which is probably not pronounced like that.
And he's Kosovan.
So close.
Yeah.
Well.
Although he was born in Switzerland, interestingly, so there you go.
Right,
I mean,
well...
Still not Dutch. Closer.
Well, you live and learn. I wrote down two things from this match. One was... probably worth pointing out the ref didn't give anything on the penalty. Obviously, VAR gave it a penalty and a red card. So, you know, on one hand, good for VAR. On the other hand, these refs are starting to just really steal a living, aren't they? I mean, how can you... It was blatant as well.
Do you know, with that, and I'll sort of come on to it a bit more when we're talking about the Villa game, is that there's so many refs now. And, you know, this, you know, loads of people have kind of said this already. And you kind of think if there was no such thing as VAR that never been brought in, the ref maybe probably would, like, just make that decision to give a penalty. But because they don't want to be seen as having made a mistake, and just, you know, if you give a penalty as a referee, you know, for stuff like a handball or, you know, fouls and things like that, if you then get, say, sent to VAR and you're showing that it wasn't a handball or that there wasn't the foul there, then you can legitimately make the accusation that a referee that, well, you've obviously guessed at something to give that penalty because you can't have seen something that didn't happen. And so that they don't want to be seen as having guessed for penalties and stuff like that, so they're not giving stuff unless they're at, you know, completely 100% convinced by it. And yeah, and so you're missing out on stuff being given.
I know, and then the problem with that is that we get these, like, they review it on VAR and go, well, it's not a clear and obvious error, so I'm not going to give it. And it's like, well,
yeah,
that's great. But then, you know, less penalties get given by VAR. I mean, this one obviously was a stonewall one, which was right to be given, but there's quite a lot where they go, well, you know, the ref on the field hasn't given it, so we're not going to, like, I mean, I wasn't here last week, but the Man City Liverpool one where Doku kicked someone in the tit in the last minute. And I was like, well, it's probably all right. but I'm like, I'm not sure it is. Like,
I know. Very strange. But as I say, I've got more to say on that when we come on to the video game.
Well, I look forward to that. Brentford, no wins again. Struggling to get wins. They're going to have to find a way somewhere. I mean, this was obviously one they thought they would win. But as you say, the game plan was somewhat uprooted in the first few minutes. Next game is Man United at home, Brighton at home, Villa away, and then they have Sheffield United at home, which should be fine. And then they play Luton and Everton back to back. So,
yeah,
some big games ahead, but also there's a break in those fixtures in the middle of April, which you'd think will probably seal there.
Yeah, I think if after the next three against United, Brighton and us, assuming, you know, if they're not in that relegation zone or if they're, you know, kind of one or two points behind, ahead of it, then the next three are fairly decent fixtures for them in terms of, you know, very winnable games.
I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Man United, to be honest.
God, I really hope they do.
Brentford, I think I said before, they get up for the big games. Like, yeah. It's obviously like quite a close atmosphere in that stadium. It's if they get going well and the fans are behind them and the way they play at their best is difficult to combat. So they'll certainly give them a game anyway, but we'll talk about that in a few weeks. Next up was another six-pointer as Luton hosted Nottingham Forest. I have a question for you, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
Who or what is a Luke Berry?
Do you know, when I saw it on Match of the Day, I did think the same thing. Is this a fan that's won a competition for the day? Like, I honestly couldn't tell you anything about him. Has he played at all this season?
Well, I don't know what he does, but I mean, he scored a very important, or potentially very important, equaliser here, becoming the first man in the process to score for a team in all five divisions.
Well, there you go. Fair play to him. I have no idea who he is.
Yeah, well, fair play to Luke Berry, who is 31, formerly of Cambridge and Barnsley. So, good for him. He's had a time of his life since joining Luton in 2017.
Yeah, and that's a little record that you know, he'll always have that.
He will always have that. I can't imagine anyone's ever going to beat that. So,
yeah,
fair play to him.
Bloody going some.
Well, either way, his goal could prove to be important in the relegation scrap. Certainly, in the way obviously the way the table looks now. I mean, is there anything you want to say about the match itself before we get into points deductions and stuff? I mean, it seemed like your typical relegation fair where Forest cleared the better players but didn't really make the most of it, and then obviously Luton just hang in games and eventually snatch one from a set piece.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it makes a nice change for Luton to actually be on the right side of a late goal change in the game at home.
Yes.
Been on the wrong side of a few of them, but it's one of those classic the draw does not an awful lot for either team, really.
Not really, no. I think Luton looked a bit shattered after going 3-0 up on Wednesday night.
God, yeah.
To lose 4-3 to Bournemouth. But you know, I suppose you'd say fair play to Bournemouth to turn that around, but for Luton they went from, you know, potentially being out and clear to have been smack bang right in the bottom three. That was until around lunchtime today when Nottingham Forest were docked 4 points. Now, I don't know where they got four from. I've seen various bits about because they complied, they were given some leniency. I don't know how true that is. I don't know if you've seen anything official on this, but 4 points is the verdict anyway.
Yeah, no, I've read that it would have been six, but because they like fully, completely cooperated and provided actual, accurate, real information when asked for it, that's why it was reduced by 2 points to the four.
Hmm. And does the number 7.2 million mean anything to you?
Should it?
No, it's the number of plates smashed by the Nottingham Forest chairman upon hearing the verdict.
I'm sure he's got a few knocking around.
I'm sure he does.
I think he signed up to some deal 18 months ago that with every player you sign, you get a few hundred thousand plates alongside it.
Well, that explains many things. Obviously, Forest haven't taken it well. They're going to appeal until forever, the chairman said to do, which is a brave thing to suggest. Where does this end, Si? Because like they're going to appeal this, and then there's probably going to be the next one that's going to come in, and then it's just going to continue forever, and we're never going to finish this season.
Well, I think so. I think if they were to appeal sort of relatively quickly in the next day or two, then the verdict on that would be 4 days after the season ends, which I don't see how, like, that's just a mess the way that is. And obviously, if Everton, get another points deduction, which you would assume is going to happen, then that would be even longer. You know, you're going into June as to because of how long the processes all take. So they've got themselves into a mess with it. But what I think will happen, and I think I said it last week, is there'll be a rule change in the summer with all this, because I think whilst the Premier League will happily try and make an example of and take points off teams like Everton and Forest, who, you know, are big names in English football, but not where they once were, they'll happily do that. But when the reality of actually having to do it to a team like Chelsea or Man City, who are, you know, golden geese for the Premier League, they're not going to want to do that. And I was listening to a podcast the other week, because obviously Villa reported these big losses. But I listened to a podcast with this football finance expert who was sort of talking about it, and Villa aren't in any bad sort of situation at all. Like, it's sort of being blown out of proportion as to where we might be. But what this guy was saying was that pretty much every Premier League club, bar, I think he said Liverpool, Tottenham, and I think it was Brentford or Brighton, every other club is dangerously close to breaking these PSR rules. Mm. So there'll be some sort of change, because you can't have this. But what I don't understand as well, I kind of mentioned this last week, is why now they've suddenly decided to crack down on this, because there's absolutely no way for the last 15 years or however long these rules, you know, been in place, that clubs spent 14 of those years all operating within the rules, and it's only this last year that everyone's gone mental. So it's very strange, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of change to this, because you can't have a case where clubs like yourself and us, who've got really wealthy owners, are going to have to sell like academy players to balance, but like that's just it can't be the way that football clubs have to sell homegrown players who won't want to leave the club and who you don't want to sell, but you have to do it to avoid these deductions. It's just a nonsense.
It is. I mean, I think the idea of it is a good one, to try and make the league fair, but the problem is the top clubs seem to have carte blanche to do what they want, and it's impossible for everyone else, all clubs included, to try and catch up, because of the various blockages in place now for me being able to do anything. It's just never going to happen, is it? So
yeah, it's like funny that I saw something then on Sky Sports the other day. Gary Neville was sort of giving what his solution would be, and actually, I thought it kind of made decent sense, to be fair. So he was kind of saying, because there does need to be you can't have clubs going absolutely crazy, but like kind of people, you know, say if you've got owners, you know, wealthy owners, why shouldn't they be allowed to spend what they want? And you do kind of think, okay, yeah, that's, you know, that maybe there's an argument for that. But then you've got, say, teams like Crystal Palace are then trying to compete with countries, like yourself, City. So you're never going to have any competitive, you're never going to have any proper competitions. What Gary Neville was saying, and that's how I thought this made sense, whoever the highest making revenue club in the league is, so say, for example, it's Manchester United with their worldwide revenue, and that revenue that they make each year was, say, 600 million, then every club in the... You put a cap on whatever the revenue of the highest club is. So, the example, Man U, 600 million. So every club can spend up to that if they're able to. Now, you've got to have, proof. The owners, there's got to be guarantees in place that whoever owns these football clubs you know, will have the money in place to do that. But if you allow every club, if they're able to spend that, it kind of, you know, makes it a, you know, kind of fairer for some of the teams to try and catch up, because those top earning clubs haven't got a carte blanche, you say, to go and do what they want. You know, the other clubs, if they're lucky enough, like yourselves and us, to have wealthy owners, they can at least match what the, you know, what the top clubs are able to spend each year. No, I actually thought that was a fairly decent idea.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, that promotes bigger amount of spending. It's obviously going to favour the likes of us. But like, it's not like the lowest, I don't say the less wealthy clubs, shall we say.
Yeah.
It's not like they're suddenly missing out, because they're already missing out. Like,
yeah, well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And it means they might not have to sell, like, you know, their pride and joy academy player to make ends meet. So it's going to be better than what we're doing now, because it's, I mean, you've got someone like Man City who have obviously got these charges hanging over them. Do you see, I don't know if we talked about this a few weeks ago, but they played Chelsea, I think, in a 5:30 game a few weeks ago, and someone did a thread on Twitter of what the, they have like sponsors on the stairs, on the, like the, I know, on the bottom tier of the ground.
Bloody hell.
And someone did a thread on, like, I think these four companies and who they are and how much they make Man City. And like all of them are like shell companies that have just been set up by Man City's owners. And it's
that,
like,
that is a surprise.
I know. And it's just like, they're playing the system. They've played it really fucking well. They've won everything. They're going to win everything probably twice over. Yeah. Can we just relegate in the Division 3 and just be done with this? Like,
it would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. Like, they've had their fun, right? I know I went through the whole thing of like, oh, Man City, you know, they've been tortured for years, right?
Yeah.
That's done now. They've won everything, right? They've won everything. They've won more than I've seen any of my teams even close to winning, right? You've had your fun. Now fuck off, right?
Yeah, let someone else have a go.
And you know what? Take all your pals with you, right? Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, Spurs. Fuck off, right? Go and play in your Super League, or go and play anywhere else. I've had enough of all this shit.
I think you make a valid point, sir.
Some of that might not happen. Lost out what we're talking about now. Oh, I know what we're talking about. Fulham 3, Tottenham 0. I enjoyed this. Good result.
So did I.
Good. has anybody, you know Mooney's from Fulham?
Yeah.
Has anybody tested his piss recently? Because because this is insane.
Oh, he's doing well, isn't he?
7-7 now, maybe? It's
yeah.
I mean, he takes his goal so well. I think
that first goal's lovely, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know why they ever bothered wasting the time with Vinicius Jr. when they had this kid knocking around.
Fulham. So, if ever football clubs had guardian angels, Fulham are Aston Villa's guardian angels. And I'll tell you why. So, 2018, they beat us in the playoff final to get promoted to the Premier League. They were devastating at the time for myself. However, that then led to our chairman at the time, Dr. Tony, the crazy Dr. Tony, I'd love to know what he's up to these days. But he was then exposed as actually having no money at all. And
I hear what that happens.
Yes, but it ended up with our football club being taken over by Wes Edens and Luis Suarez, who have been outstanding, you know, one of the best owners of a football club in the Premier League. They've been unbelievable. So Fulham helped, you know, really helped us out there. But they weren't done, Dave. They were not done, because in October 2022, they absolutely humiliated us on a rainy Thursday night, 3-0. And it led to Steven Gerrard being sacked and Unai Emery being appointed. But Dave, they still weren't still helping us out, because a couple of months ago, they meekly surrendered to us at Craven Cottage, let us win 2-1, but followed it up by going to Old Trafford and winning the 99th minute winner. But they still weren't done, because on Saturday, they helped us out once again. After Tottenham won the World Cup, Premier League, and fourth place last week at Villa Park. At least that's, I assume that's what happened from the level of their celebrations and crowing of their fans all week on Twitter. Fulham went, hold on a minute, you are not, I repeat, not upsetting Aston Villa, because they are our boys. They bat to the Michael Jackson statue. We love these lads, and they've helped us out once again by stopping Tottenham, leapfrogging us in the table. So God bless Fulham Football Club.
God bless us, everyone. Yeah, well, in roundabout terms, Fulham thrashed the tits off Tottenham 3-0. Muniz scored twice, and that other fellow scored. Lukic, with a nice little deft header. I wasn't watching this because I was watching our game at the same time, but from the highlights, totally deserved. Tottenham didn't seem to get going at all. I don't know if you watched this one, did you?
I did, yeah. I don't mean this in any sort of disrespectful way, but I was fairly sure what was going to happen in your game.
Yeah, well, no, same.
So this obviously with us and Tottenham fighting it out for fourth, I thought, okay, I'm going to keep an eye on this. But yeah, honestly, Fulham battered them, like really, really battered them. I was delighted. After the game, on Sky Sports, Jamie Redknapp seemed very surprised by the result, saying, I thought these type of games were a thing of the past. Tottenham have thrown a few really good performances in this season. I was a little bit surprised, purely because obviously they had a very good result, unfortunately, against us last weekend. And then, you know, with this opportunity this weekend to go above us in the table, and they've still got a game in hand on us, I was fearing the worst a little bit, but Fulham completely deserve the win. And yeah, they're looking good. I said a few weeks ago about Fulham, whenever I've seen them, they've been brilliant or they've been dreadful, and they were brilliant on the weekends.
They were. And just to pick up what you said there about Tottenham, I feel like when they win, it's like they've won four games, and when they lose, it's just pushed under the carpet.
Yeah.
Like, every win is like a monumental occasion we should all celebrate and sing like Waltz and Matilda and all this kind of shit. And when they lose, it's like, just a blip in the road. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. I think it's part of the media loving with Big Ange, mate. You know, they're so desperate to run the narrative of, you know, look how he's changed the club after the last few years under Conte, Mourinho, the Tottenham, they've got their way of playing football back. And it's like, when they're good, they can look brilliant. But quite a few times this season, I've looked at them and thought, like, there's issues at that football club. With the playing personnel, and it's kind of also like, just I think a real exaggeration about some of their players as well. Like some that Adoghi. Come the end of the season, when pundits and everyone all doing their sort of team of the year, he guarantee 100% he's going to be picked as the left back. Now, yeah, he's good going forward. You know, he's an attacking threat, and he gets in some really good positions. But occasionally, I'd like my left back to actually be able to defend, and I don't rate him defensively at all. I mean, I don't really rate any of their players defensively. I mean, obviously, people will tell you that Van de Ven is, you know, one of the best players to play in recent years, and they seem obsessed with him and his pace.
I don't think
near as good as people would like you to. As the media pundits are desperate to have, do you think they are?
Yeah, I just think Van der Ven played you guys quite well last weekend, until he obviously went off injured. And obviously without him here, they were soundly beaten. So I think part of that is down to, Romero being insane and the two fullbacks not actually defending. And I don't know anything about Dragosin yet, but he's got a top knot. He's from Eastern Europe, so you know he's trouble.
I mean, that is literally the perfect description. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll save this. I was going to say in terms of top four, but obviously we're going to go into our game next. I'll save that element of the show until after our game.
Oh, well, surprise. Up next is West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. I didn't even watch the highlights. I was in a fettle about football last night, so I didn't bother, but I knew that you'd watch this. So West Ham took the lead through Antonio. That counted. They had two more disallowed, I think.
Three
more disallowed. Zaniolo equalised, and it finished 1-1. Before we get into the decisions, fair result. I'm looking at the stats here. Even Stevens on shots. You had a lot more of the ball. What do you think?
Yeah, on the balance of play, it probably was. The first half, first 15, 20 minutes, we were in sort of full control of the game. As you say, we had a hell of a lot more of the ball than them. But I said this when I was doing the Villa podcast last night. You kind of have to counter that with the fact that it's our game plan to have a lot of the ball, but it is sort of West Ham's as well to, you know, they're happy for the opposition to have the ball because they're very much set at, you know, strong, organised, deep defensive block and hit on the counter-attack. So it's kind of playing into both teams' game plan. But we kind of, I think what's happened with us a few times this season, especially if we've taken leads in games, there is an element of complacency that can slip into our game if it feels like it's sort of become a bit too easy. And I think that's what happened about 20, 25 minutes in. We just got really sloppy at the back and it's kind of sort of allowed them to get themselves into the game by, you know, allowing passes to be closed down and stuff, you know, stuff that gets the crowds up a little bit.
Mm.
And then their goal came from sort of us needlessly giving the ball away, ended up having to concede a throw-in. 20 seconds later, the ball's in the back of the net. Antonio, his first goal since August. Cause, I mean, there's one thing Villa are. Your striker hasn't scored for a while. You look for when you're playing us. I mean, we gave Raul Jimenez his first goal for about 2 years. We gave the little gimp at Manu his first goal on Boxing Day. So, yeah, we do like to help out the little folk from time to time. And then the rest of the first half, we weren't great. The first of their disallowed goals came towards the end of that first half. And obviously, you haven't seen anything from it. So this was the only one where you could have maybe a bit of sympathy for West Ham. Basically, corner into the box, and Antonio and Martinez were kind of, you know, wrestling with each other a little bit. Ball gets cleared out. Ref blows for a foul as Kudus sort of wins the ball and sticks it away. So, he'd blown for the foul already, so you can't go and look back at it. It was one that you look at it and you can see why it was given as a foul, but if it hadn't have been, you couldn't have had too many complaints. Like, Martinez was kind of sort of pushing away at Antonio, but Antonio does have, as the ball's coming in, he does have his arm sort of across Martinez and he's sort of holding him back a little bit. So I think purely because his arm was up for so long across him, that's probably why the foul was given. But you could argue it was a bit of a soft one. And then start the second half, they have their second goal disallowed. Corner comes in, it hits Antonio's elbow and goes in. So
no
complaints about that. And then we got into the game more. We made two changes at half time. We brought Diaby and Matty Cash on. Pushed Konsa back into centre back, and we looked just so much better then because Cash offers a lot more going forwards than Konsa will. And Diaby, was, you know, he's sort of been coming, starting to refine his form over the last few weeks. And we started to create some chances and brought Zaniolo and Digne on. And, I mean, Zaniolo, I've kind of really gone off him the last month or two. And one of the group chats when he came on, I sent him a message like going, why is this waste of space come on the pitch? But it was awesome. You know, sometimes you send a message about a player like that and you kind of send it thinking, if I send this, the universe will try and punish me, but it's not a punishment because you're wanting to score. So there was an element to that. He took his goal really well. Like, it was really well worked goal, built out from the back. Diaby did well. Zaniolo, you know, it was a good run and a neat finish. And then it's kind of you thinking, okay, it's playing out to a draw. And then obviously the last disallowed goal, which I've seen described as controversial, but I don't know what's controversial about disallowing a goal when there's been a foul and two players have handballed it. So the free kick comes in, it's a bit of a melee, goes in, the Villa players are all screaming at the handball. And so the issue where I think a lot of the West Ham fans in particular have got angry because the VAR check took just under 6 minutes, the longest VAR check in Premier League history.
Great.
Yeah, and so a lot of, you know, loads of people saying, if, you know, if it's taking more than 2 minutes, then it's not a clear and obvious error, is it? Which normally you kind of think, yeah, that, you know, there's probably a valid point there. But when you look at it, it's so clear and obvious that Suchet deliberately, you know, swings his arm at the ball to knock it onto Bowen, who's lying down on the line. And to be honest, I think it hits Bowen's hands and goes in anyway. The problem is, so the process that they have to go through is it's like working backwards. So the initial check was to see if Bowen had handled the ball on the line. Because he's lying down on the line, there's so many players in there. They spent about 4 minutes trying to find an angle that conclusively showed where it hit Bowen, but they couldn't. So then they moved back to check the Suchet one, and it's straight away. It's like, oh, yeah, you can see he's clearly dipped his shoulder and thrown his arm at the ball. So it's the process that's the problem there. And, you know, it was fun going on Twitter last night having a look at some of the West Ham meltdowns. I didn't know, that this might be news to you, that, do you know VAR have a vendetta against West Ham as well?
Oh, I'm sure they do, yeah.
I mean, I think when fans of pretty much every club are convinced that there's corruption against their club, it shows that there's no corruption, just incompetence.
Yes, but
I saw like kind of a lot of comments, you know, saying, oh, if after 2 minutes, if they can't see it, then you go with the on-field decision. And it's like, okay, so you're saying you're happy for a wrong goal to be awarded because it's taken longer than the 2 minutes that you want it to take. Like, if that, you're saying if that's at the other end of the pitch, you go, well, 2 minutes was up, so fair play, Villa get the goal. Of course, like it was a handball. The only controversial VAR handball call yesterday in that game was the penalty that wasn't given for us in the first half, which is unbelievable how it wasn't even looked at. Obviously, again, you haven't seen it, so you won't be able to comment, but Bailey's running with the ball into the box. Emerson's backing off him. And he sticks his arm out, and he's obviously pointing at a Villa player making a run, you know, telling one of his defenders, you know, trap that run. So he's not putting his arm out to block the ball, but he stuck his arm out, which is, you know, that's not a natural position.
No.
Bailey tries to clip the ball into the path of Konsa, who's made the run that Emerson very wisely pointed out. But it strikes him on the arm, and, you know, Bailey's probably about 5 or 6 yards away. So, honestly, when you see it, I'm fairly sure you'll agree that's a penalty, especially when you've seen what some penalties. But, you know, when you go back to that, was it the Luton Sheffield United game the other week when they both got penalties other handballs at corners, which both managers were like, they were both nonsense. So I was amazed that that one wasn't given. But yeah, West Ham were the ones who were robbed by VAR, but not us. So,
Well, those who shout loudest, shout, I don't know. Either way, right. Sounds like a fun day of VAR action.
Yeah, but they actually got the goals that they disallowed for West Ham. Like I said, the first one did something to do with them because the ref's blown for a foul before the ball's gone in. And yeah, you could argue that could have gone either way. But the two goals West Ham scored that were disallowed, there's no way you can have any arguments about them being disallowed whatsoever, just because it was in the last minute of the game. And obviously that makes it a bit more galling if you're a fan. But, you can't score with your arms.
No, that's very true. Well, that ends the Premier League element of today's roundup. Obviously only four games, not huge changes in the table. But Villa retain a three-point, well, extend their lead to 3 points over Tottenham. Tottenham still do have a game in hand, but that's many weeks away, so enjoy being fourth. And by looks of things, fifth is going to be enough for the Champions League. Although those following the old coefficient battle with Germany for England to get that fifth place, obviously the quarterfinal draws are thrown up: Arsenal v Bayern Munich and Bayer Leverkusen versus West Ham, which is two big games in the coefficient battle.
Yeah, it was annoying, that one, from my point of view. Yeah, I mean, in terms of that, I personally back us to finish fourth. I know we've played more games in Tottenham this season, and I've certainly got at least two more to come with the Milan quarter final. But I do back us. I think we've got better players than them, and the point for us as well on the weekends means that we've still not lost back-to-back Premier League games this season, which I think is quite an underrated achievement. We've shown that if we lose a game, we don't let that spin into two or three, whereas Tottenham have gone on losing streaks this season. And we've both got tough fixtures. We've both got to play the top three. So we're both going to drop points between now and the end of the season, but I do back us to get fourth, assuming we don't get any more fucking injuries.
Well, I'm sure you will, because everyone else does. So, I mean, I was worried for Ollie Watkins on Thursday night when he went down against Ajax.
Oh, God. Mate, honestly, my heart went.
Luckily for him, just a massive gash, also known as the Sigh Special. Anyway, moving on to... the FA Cup games. Two of your neighbours played out a cracking game on Saturday lunchtime. Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Coventry City 3. Only tells half of the story, really. just a great cup tie. Did you watch this? Or?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into the games, I mean, even the commentary, Clive and Ali, was just the perfect amuse-bouche to this game. Really good, honest football from both teams. And Coventry nicked it with two goals in stoppage time. One thing I haven't been back to watch, why was Gary O'Neill so upset with Mark Robbins' celebration? What did he do?
He said it. So one of the Wolves ball boys, I think after Wolves had gone 2-1 up, was... The nicest way you could put it was a little slower than he could have been in returning the ball to a Coventry player for a throw-in. So when Coventry got their winner, Robbins kind of celebrated in his face a little bit.
Like, we're talking DX crotch chops, or just like...
just kind of, ran into his face and sort of... Not into his, just in front of him and, as he's celebrating. And I... Valuable life lesson for the kids, As Jamie Vardy once said, chat shit, get banged.
That's true. That's it. He'll never do it again, will he?
Exactly.
Or he'll go on to produce a multi-million pound vodka business like the poor boy who got kicked to shit by Eden Hazard. when we're all drinking, like, Robin's room in a few years' time. It'd be like, well,
Robin's room.
Now I know why. Yeah, but thoroughly enjoyable game of association football there. So that was Coventry in the semi-finals, where the least surprising result of the weekend, as you alluded to earlier, Man City walked out 2-0 winners against Newcastle. Two deflected goals from Bernardo Silva, which, I mean, it was a cakewalk after that. It's frustrating to lose to two soft goals, really, because I don't think either shot was even going in, to be honest, until they took the deflections. But at home they did. I don't think we did an awful lot wrong, to be honest. I liked the way we set up. I thought we had a good game plan. Problem is, when you play against Man City, you've got to be clinical. You've got to take the opportunities when they come along. And we didn't, and also made a mess of three or four other openings in the second half where we could have made it interesting. So the dream dies for another year. For us, I mean, you've got to look at the bigger picture. And for me, like, we competed on four fronts this season. The last one has been extinguished in March, which is good for us, in a way. It obviously got to the quarterfinals and everything except Champions League, where we were one bullshit penalty decision in Paris away from, you know, really getting out of that group of death, which would have been nice. But hey ho, we live and learn. A lot of fans on our Twitter have been saying, oh, season's over now, etc., etc. Like, we've got a quarter of the league season to go, and for all we're 10th, we're 4 points off 7th.
Yeah.
West Ham have got to come to us, they're 7th, that's our next game. Brighton have got to come to us, they're 8th. And very Jekyll and Hyde anyway.
You've got Tottenham at home, haven't you?
Spurs at home, Man United away. Wolves are 9th, we've played them twice, but to be honest, Wolves at dropping like flies. I think Neto's out for the season now, which won't help their cause. Obviously, Chelsea are batshit insane. We've got to go to Fulham. So, you know, we've got to go to Palace. We've got a lot of teams around us to play, is what I'm saying. And
what's your squad looking like now in terms of injuries?
It's getting there. Still missing Callum Wilson, which, perennial, really.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Linton,
you write that into a season, don't you?
Yeah, well, Joe Linton and Nick Pope scheduled for late April, which is probably too late for it to really matter, but that's three big players still, don't get us wrong, the three I'd rather have than not have, but those three are sort of long terms. Everyone else is more or less there. I think Trippier should be back by the time we play again after the international break. Tino the same, he missed this one with an ankle injury, having been kicked to shit by Chelsea last Monday, for want of a better term. Getting somewhere near. Again, I read the WhatsApp, and me and Carl were moaning the other night, but like, it's been an absolute mad season in terms of like the results we've pulled out against good sides. And some of the fucking hinds we've had off average teams. It just means I've got absolutely no idea how the season's going to end. But I'm still optimistic we can finish in the top seven, to be honest. I say, like, the games aren't bad. Play the top four home and away. Tottenham to come to us. Again, could go either way. They're either on it or they're not, as we discussed earlier. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think the players have got to, you know, believe there's something to play for, and hopefully they do think that. But what we also have at the end of this long, hard, grueling season is two friendlies in Australia to look forward to in the last week of the season now. So that's nice for everybody involved, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, these pesky FA Cup replays that knacker players.
Mm.
Yeah, but they're the problem, aren't they?
I know.
Ridiculous. Absolutely.
There's so many things that are just starting to get out of control with, like, big bastard clubs who've seen how far too much say in these things.
Do you think Eddie Howe will still be manager at the start of next season? I think he should.
Yes. I think he will. There's been no noises from people close to the club that suggest he won't be. There's a lot of people in, like, we'll call it the lazy media, who are just going, well, they'll sack him and they'll appoint Mourinho because.
Yeah.
And that's why. Like, there's no actual substance to it.
I think they Mourinho's is in Saudi Arabia, wasn't he, about a week ago?
Yeah, and obviously the only interest Saudi Arabia have in sport is Newcastle United. So that's the only logical conclusion you can come to on that. I don't think Howe will get peddled in the summer. I don't think he'll walk away. He does look knackered, mind. I think he needs a break. I think this season's been quite wearing on him. He's probably learned a lot from it. I hope he's learned a lot from it. Cause
I think the only thing I would, on the Mourinho thing, is whether the sort of higher up people at Newcastle, in terms of ownership, think he's a name.
Yeah, well, the thing is, with our ownership, we don't really know what they're into, because so far they've obviously come in. They've appointed Eddie Howe, haven't tried to appoint Emery, by all account. And that's all we know. Like, there's no real history to go off of what, you know, when they pull the trigger or when they, you know, what the how hands-on they are. If they're happy just to let Staveley and her husband sort of run it as they have been doing. We don't know, like, at what point they'll step in and say, like, you know, enough's enough, we need results now, whatever else. I do wonder if they're waiting to see how some of this profit and sustainability stuff plays out, because if, you know, if the rules change and we're allowed to go bananas with what we spend, and it's a different ballgame overnight, isn't it? But I don't think there's an awful lot of merit in bringing in a Jose Mourinho, because he's going to want to spend money and doesn't seem like we're able to spend money. Now, I think in the summer, that will alleviate a little bit. Obviously, as time moves on, obviously, what time period you've got to account for change. And our revenue is going up. We've obviously got the Champions League revenue to account for and stuff like that. So it will get better. Maybe not to the point where we can spend haphazardly, but certainly more so than we could in the summer just gone. And we'll just see what happens. I don't want to say, you know, this season's been a write-off because we've lost players injury and that, because injuries are part of football, and you've kind of got to deal with it. You're going to compete on four fronts. But I do think we will have learned a lot from it. There's what we need. Maybe how to approach some games. And again, be nice to get some decent draws, because we can, not just because we got the Champions League draw, because, I mean, I think being in the bottom pot was always a chance it was going to turn out something similar to what we got. But then to draw, you know, like Man United away at the first hurdle in the Carabao Cup, and Sunderland away in the first round of the FA Cup. Yeah. Like, these are games you're not going to rest players in, because, you know, one in the Carabao Cup, it's a real chance of silver, and we probably should have done, well, we should have done in the semi-final, really, had we not blown it in injury time against Chelsea. And obviously, Sunderland speaks for itself. We hadn't beaten them in something like 10 years before we played them. And you cannot take a chance on that if you're in any half position. So, you know, I don't begrudge him playing the strongest team, even if it ultimately finished Joe Linton off. But I think as well, from what he's said in the press this week, there's quite a lot of players who are carrying things, and they're getting through, maybe not training very much and having injections before the game, which again, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if our results start to fall off and becomes likely we're not going to finish high up, some of those players will be sent for surgery a little bit early and just trying to get them ready again for next season. But that's all ifs and buts. But it's been an absolutely mad season where we've obviously played some clubs who I never thought we'd play again. You know, a couple of years ago it seemed impossible. So I'm not upset if we finish 10th. Fine. If we finish 7th, fantastic. But I think Howe's deserved another season. And obviously, if that doesn't go to plan, if we're 10th again this time next year, I'll probably would say we won't be in a position, unless we happen to have, you know, won the FA Cup or something. But I don't think that would happen if we're 10th, put it that way. But anyway, for the time being, he's fully got my backing. Not that mine matters, like, but I don't think he's in any trouble with the current owners, because to be fair to the ones who are the sort of the mouthpieces, they seem pretty switched on. I know if you watch the documentary, probably not your cup of tea to watch our documentary, but they always said like this season they're expecting a drop off, and it was more of a bit of a bonus, to be honest, because we weren't ever planning to be in the Champions League in sort of season two of this project.
Oh, gotcha. So
he's more than earned the right to have another crack at it, I think. And hopefully we don't sign a gambling addict this summer and we can actually...
due diligence next time.
Yes, well, he's off in the Ashworth, who, that's his only deal. He signed Harvey Barnes, who broke a foot, and he signed Tenali, who liked to gamble. So good luck, Man United. That was Saturday's FA Cup games, and Sunday's games, well, Chelsea-Leicester looked like a damn squib at half-time when Chelsea were 2-0 up. Did you see the best own goal ever scored?
The only thing I've seen from this game is Raheem Sterling free kick that's been doing the rounds on social media. Yeah.
The second half was Chelsea's season in a nutshell, where, like, under no pressure, De Sassi decided to smash the ball from 40 yards into his own goal. You'll have to look at it. Like, he's under pressure from the attacker, but it doesn't explain why he managed to slice it so badly from probably fully 40 yards, I think, into the goal. Obviously, Sanchez is the keeper, which doesn't help either. What was great after that was that every time he got the ball, the Leicester fans started to shout "shoot" at him, which I thought, you know, great football humour. Well done. Leicester equalised as well, good goal. And you're thinking, this is on, they could do this. And then Nicholas Jackson did a lovely turn to get in behind. And then they got the red card on the back of that. And fundamentally, Chelsea had that extra quality, an extra man to win the game. Sterling, though, missed a pen, having taken the ball off Cole Palmer, who doesn't miss, but Cole Palmer let him have it. That was at 1-0. He had his pen saved, so that was pathetic. I think Sterling did something else bad before the free kick, because the fans were always like kind of on his back, and then he took a free kick. cleared the lower end of that stand nicely. And just got booed, and then got subbed off to booze. It was like, "Ah, I see you later."
Seen that own goal.
Oh,
fucking hell!
Absolutely outstanding. Top everything.
That's up there with one of the best own goals I've ever seen. That's some doing. Fair play to the lads. What a finish! Right. Maybe Chelsea should stick him up front. Then he's walking.
Maybe they should.
Top corner from 40 yards.
Maybe they should. It was outstanding. So it was a good Sunday lunchtime affair. Probably not as good as Man United and Liverpool. Great game of football. This is what happens when two clubs who've done a deal with the devil come toe-to-toe, where like neither can lose, seemingly, and then eventually one of them goes, you know what, maybe we can lose. Because Liverpool could have had this game won 3 or 4 times over in normal time. Where Man United just stopped playing for 70 minutes. It was quite incredible. Like, started the game really well, fair play to them, but then Liverpool took control. And Man United had nothing, absolutely nothing. I don't know how they managed to get away with this one. Obviously, forced extra time. Should have won it, really. Rashford obviously put that shot wide, and then extra time. Usually, sometimes a cagey affair, not this one. And Nunez giving the ball away to Man United for 3-3 was bad, but then the overcommittal from the corner, and Diallo did the rest.
Yeah, unbelievable. I missed the start of the game, so I was watching Vinegar. Yeah. So I think when I turned it on about 2 or 3 minutes before McAllister scored. It's all the score, like, text on the mate supports man, you're going, you won it up, how's it been going? And before he'd reply back to me, Liverpool were 2-1 up. I just like sent a message again saying, I think I've jinxed it for you. And then, so at half time, obviously I saw Roy Keane looking like he was about to have a seizure. And I thought, I don't need my mate to text me back to ask how this first half has gone. And so I naturally assumed, okay, well, this is going to run out 3-4-5. But just, yeah, that's ridiculous. I think if you concede a late goal to Anthony on his right foot, some serious questions have got to be asked about not just the defence. I think the football club as a whole needs to have a good, long, hard look in the mirror at themselves and wonder, do they bother continuing? Because they've allowed an awful footballer, and the word footballer is doing some heavy lifting there, to equalise against them. And I've ended the dream that we're all praying for of this quadruple for our Jurgen. Even though it's not really quadruple because it's the Europa League, not Champions League. But don't let facts get in the way of a beautiful romantic story that the nation was praying. There's two things that have been on everyone's lips in the last week. One, where's Kate Middleton? And two, God, wouldn't it be amazing if our Jurgen did the quadruple? We saw not three fist bumps, but four fist bumps, one for each trophy in that final game. And they've let it slip. Devastated.
Where do you think Kate Middleton is?
That's a very good question, man. and ones I don't think we can answer in that. Without some legal representation.
No. Probably. No, I'm just setting up for a fall there, really, asking you that. Because I'm sure the Royal Family's legal team listen to this pod week in, week out.
Yeah, well, Prince William's a Villa fan, isn't he? So he'll want to hear my opinions.
Well, I'm sure. He's on your table at Ball Club, isn't he? So.
Yeah, to be fair, yeah. Honorary president.
A late admission, admittedly. He hung on for a while, but he's finally a card-carrying member, I think.
Fully signed up.
Fully signed up. There's no going back from this. Unless that's where Kate's gone. Her hair has been transported under his head.
The next Ball Club meeting, I'll get skinny, and I'll break the news to you first before calling the son.
Please. Have you got a mullet? You'll know how it happened.
Exactly.
Shouldn't laugh. We don't know what's wrong with her.
Yeah, no, you
might. If anything, it might be fine.
Exactly. You know how we've on occasions gone on some weird tangents?
No, not us.
This is up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, Man U 4, Liverpool 3.
Man on the last post. That'll be us.
Do you know what I have? I saw the brilliant tweet yesterday. You're saying Man United fans buzzing about getting Coventry in the semi-final don't realise that all the Coventry fans are buzzing by being drawn against Man U.
Honestly, I mean, we could probably do a whole podcast on Man United because they are like the best and worst team to play against because they're absolutely shit. I can't understate how bad they are at times, right? Yeah. And yet, they always get away with it.
I know, it's...
It's inexplicable. Yeah. Like, Coventry will go and play them in a few weeks in that semi-final and they'll have more shots, they'll have more better chances and they'll lose 3-1 and no one will understand how it's happened.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, they are like that, and it's why, the end of the last few years, when they've somehow finished in the top four, and you look at it, and you think, how's that happened? Because all you look back over a season, and you rarely remember the, individual specific results of a team that you don't support. So what you can remember is, well, every time I've seen Man U, like, they were shit. But then that's where the confusion starts, because your brain can't compute the fact that you know they've been shit with the reality that they've gathered enough points to a finish what they have. Like, it makes no sense. I mean, I do genuinely think, though, they won't pull that trick off this year of finishing in the top four. They may somehow manage to overtake Tottenham and finish fifth, and you'll be looking, thinking, how are these in the Champions League again?
I kind of expect it, to be honest. Like, they'll find a way. And no one will really understand how.
I mean, and you're right, Dave. You can almost write what's going to happen in that semi-final. You'll be watching it thinking, fucking Coventry have got a real chance here. But, from the end of that weekend, you'll be going, so it's a Man U, Man City final again, and we all know what will happen in that.
Yeah.
Like, we know what's going to happen in these two games and then the final already, don't we?
Probably, yeah, but because it's Man United, there's always that caveat that, like, it might not. Like, Man City could have all the ball and all the shots, and somehow Man United will win.
Yeah, I think probably City are the only team that...
Yeah, well...
Yeah. But, you're right, you never know. You absolutely never know. But, isn't there part of you that thinks, okay, if they did, say, win an FA Cup or sneaks into fifth and get the Champions League, then there's a possibility that means they'll keep Ten Hag for another season?
That is true. I wouldn't like a chance at though. Like, I'd rather have the misery. I'd rather have the misery of not winning the cups, and then the
100%, yeah.
And then they might get it, and they might not. It doesn't really matter. Like,
yeah.
I don't know who they'd appoint, but I'm sure they'll find some idiot to take the job.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Probably Eddie Howe. Dan Ash will take him with him.
Yeah. I hope Coventry beat them, but then I want Coventry to get fucking battered in that final
I don't think that'll be a problem. As long as Man City beat Chelsea in the semi final.
Yes.
That's an imperative, only because I need the top eight to make the Europa League qualification. Nothing to do with my blind hatred of the football club, except Suggs and Ryan. Probably 95% the league thing and 5% the hatred thing.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you would have absolutely no trust whatsoever in Chelsea, like, beating... there's no way that would happen.
No, I mean, a Chelsea-Man United final is just, like, an absolute worst-case scenario.
Oh, God, that doesn't bear thinking about.
Doesn't bear thinking about. So that's not. Right, let's wrap this up, because Ali Thompson's going to teach me how to edit. And then I've become self-sufficient.
Happy days. Teach man to fish.
That's it. Anyway, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at @SioRegan and the Holtcast podcast.
Lovely. You can find me on X/Twitter at @CM9798. And the website, which is still there, just lacking content at the minute, cm9798.co.uk. You can find the show on all those things at Man on the Post. And you can find us on all your favourite podcast places, including Amazon Music, Man on the Post, with two episodes a week from ourselves and one from Chris and the Gang, which comes out on a Saturday. Simon?
Yes, Dave.
We've come to the end. Goodbye, my friend.
Yes, we've got a little break, haven't we, now, of the international break?
We have, but stay strong. It's an awful international break as well. Like, it's one of those where you just, like...
I mean, I'll...
You know the Pinocchio gif where he's lying face down in the puddle, and it's like, do not resuscitate. Like, that's me, like, during these 2 weeks. There's nothing.
I mean, I will be at Wembley for both of those games.
Well, you've got to get those points in, haven't you, because you'd be going in the summer, aren't you?
Exactly. I've got my tickets for the summer already, but I'm thinking ahead to the next World Cup and all that. The Brazil game. I'm looking forward to that. Saturday night. Get down to London mid afternoon, few beers with the boys. Be a good day out. Bit of samba dancing in the streets. But I'm going to be honest, that Belgian game on the Tuesday night. That's going to be a bit of a slog for that game.
Well, it'll be all sambaed out by then.
Exactly. There's only so much sambering you can do on one functioning day.
That's true. Are you coming up for the England Bosnia game at Fortress St James's in June?
I think it's probably a bit too far for Monday night. So unfortunately,
hang on, it's a Monday night.
I'm pretty sure it's Monday night.
Fucking hell. and I bought tickets for that. Well, I mean, granted, it's closer for me than it is for you, but
yeah, Monday still. the 3rd of June. Had that been on the weekend of the Saturday, I think I probably would have done made a bit of a weekend, but Monday night, yeah.
Well, I've never been to an England senior game.
Have you not?
No, but I've done like live reports in the 21s, which is not really the same. But Southgate was the manager, so it was kind of the same. Actually, I tell a fucking lie, wasn't it? It was Eddie Boothroyd.
Eddie Boothroyd, bloody hell.
And Scott Gemmell was the Scotland manager. But anyway, that was then. I've lost track of what we're doing, so let's wrap this up. Right.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks after the international break. Look after yourselves and always remember to keep your man on the post. Now go out and take it all. You are the brightest star in the sky.